So Ivy, this is tough. It is truly one of those kind of impossible situations. But I want to look at something you said back at the beginning of your response. Sure, you have the luxury of sitting here in the chair and saying, you know, that airport, I'm pulling no matter what. And I understand that. And now that I think about it, maybe I should brief pulling no matter what. The pilot in the scenario briefed the standard of pulling after 600 feet, has the failure, 400 feet, crosses his mind, should I pull? But that's a change of plans. What do you do in an emergency situation like that? Do you just go with your gut and change plans? You'd be like, commit to the decision and ride it out when so much is on the line.
Well, I think there definitely has to be a commitment on the ground to follow a plan. But you're right. It is tough. You know, you're almost at 600 feet, not quite. You might be able to get there. You might be able to get close before pulling the parachute. I think in this situation, the typical briefing would have been 600 feet. But, you know, I kind of did mention if you're taking off out of a shorter runway, the brief might be pull caps immediately, slightly below 600 feet. And I think in this case, you know, close enough with a general trend of a climb and a little bit of airspeed kind of gave the pilot the ability to say, you know what, I'm going for it.
And that makes a lot of sense to me. Of course, as you mentioned, there's the danger. Once you pull that chute, you're along for the ride, and the last thing you might see is the plane nosing down as pavement is coming up because you didn't have enough altitude and time. I'm wondering, around the table, is there anyone who wouldn't pull? Even though they had the option, there's like, no way am I pulling that chute. Wally. Wally's just nodding over here.
You want me to talk now?
Yeah, yeah. He's so adamant. It's like there's no, I don't even need to say anything else. The answer is no.
No, I have a question for Ivy. You have a lot of serious experience and a lot of data available. You must be aware of some successful pulls that have occurred below 600 feet.
Absolutely.
To give you confidence in doing this. I'd be interested to know a little more about that.
Yeah, we've had deployments outside the deployment range, both on the low airspeed, high airspeed, low altitude, high altitude. So every single deployment that we've had within the deployment envelope has been successfully with no injuries, right? Outside that deployment, it's been a very high percentage of them are successful. So the ones that aren't successful are the ones that, like, the chute deployed on impact, or the chute was deployed, you know, at 100 feet, or the chute was deployed well over VNE. So in this case, you know, I'd say even if I was as low as probably 300 feet, I would take my chances with the chute. It's just going to slow the impact and reduce the amount of energy that I hit the ground.
Well, I happen to have the numbers on this because 6 months ago, I did a major review of serious accidents, and including a video. To date, there have been 107 deployments. Six of those were at altitudes below 500 feet. And all of those were successful, although injuries were involved in some of them. I think the critical thing there, as Ivy said, is to have preloaded it, is to have thought about what you're going to do at this little corner of the envelope where you're not really at the inside the CAPS envelope, but you're at a point in the flight envelope where it's been demonstrated to work, and you have about a second to decide. I'm not sure I agree with the need to pull the nose up. That gives you the altitude, but it reduces your speed. You have an advantage forward speed when the parachute deploys, because that adds to the ballistic rocket trajectory, and that gets all of this, the risers clear of the airplane, and it gets the slider removed so the canopy can start to inflate. So I'm not sure that's relevant, but at 400 feet, I would absolutely do the same thing. It just...
You know, this is going to sound really odd, but it's like, let me put it this way. I would pull the chute because flying the airplane is actually doing nothing in this case. It's the opposite of normal, but it's like if you're out of airspeed, you're at very low altitude, you can move the controls, but it's not going to have a lot of influence over where that airplane goes. And pulling the chute is you know, it's like the best thing you can do is make the right decision. The worst thing you can do is make no decision. And it's like, even if pulling the chute isn't the exact best decision, it's better than no decision in this case, in my mind.
This is a really tough scenario. And there are places like this that we all probably fly where you pause right before you take off and you think, what happens if? And you think through that. And this is a case where you'd want to do that. But I don't think I would pull the chute. And the reason is I'm below the envelope where it's published, where I've been trained to pull it, where my reaction's going to pull it. And just off the left side here, there's a little boulevard, it looks like, that's almost parallel to my track. I'm below the chute altitude, so maybe it'll work. Probably will work. But as soon as you pull the chute, now every bit of it's out of your hands. You have no idea if the chute's going to work. You have no idea where the plane's coming down. You just lost the ability, as Hoover would say, to fly the airplane all the way through the crash. Now, in some cases, that's the right thing to do when you have the altitude to pull the chute. And I'm a big believer in that parachute system that Cirrus has deployed. Over 400 lives saved, I think, to date out of all the chute pulls and all the airframes. Big believer in it. But in this case, I don't like that it just takes it completely out of my hands. I think I would opt to go on that road to my left and try to control the airplane all the way through it.
Yeah, like Richard said, this is one of those places where you don't want to have an engine failure. This is not the place to go. So first of all, why this person would take off with an engine that's been misbehaving, that's another story and another scenario. But for me, I would have said two things. I'm going to climb at best angle, which I don't normally do, and I'm going to get as much altitude as I can in a short period of time as I can get. And I would have been spring-loaded to pull the parachute at probably 400 feet or so. And that would have been my thought, was to get the airplane there and then just knowing that the parachute is there earlier. I used to fly a Lear 35 off of a 4,000-foot runway, and we took V1 and we put it at 100 knots, even though it was like 122 or whatever, because we know 120 knots, 3,000 feet down a 4,000-foot runway, you're toast. So same thing kind of with the Cirrus is, hey, get the airplane in the air, climb quickly, get to something that you think is right, and then transition and go.
You said something interesting there, and I just want to roll it back. You said you would climb at best angles. You'd climb at VX. Why would you climb at VX? It's a steeper climb, so you're not going to go as far forward, but you're not going to be as high, and you're going to have lower energy. Climbing out, wouldn't VY actually be better in this situation?
I guess in a period of time, probably, but I think the airplane has a bunch of energy on takeoff, and you clean the airplane up and you get it going. I think it's definitely a better scenario for me than the airplane's at 75 knots. It's had an engine failure. Let's pull it up a little bit more and try to, there's no energy left in the plane. It's gone.
Yeah, I agree. If you pull it up anymore at 75 knots, with the power, if you just hold your current attitude with the power off, you're going to lose that 75 knots really quick. I think just because of my background, it's fly the airplane and not pull the parachute, because I haven't been to the parachute indoctrination training yet. But I'm going to push that nose over, because that's what I've practiced my whole career, is push that nose down. I see that four-lane highway out there. It's going to turn out bad. There's cars there. There's power lines, as you pointed out. It's going to turn out bad. Whether it'll turn out worse or better than the parachute, I can't say, but that's what I would do.
You know, I like Michael's analogy between adjusting V1 and adjusting the height of the parachute pull for the, the parameters change based on the context. Also, my decision is a bit informed by an experience at my home airport in Frederick, where there was a mid-air collision and a Cirrus parachute pull at extremely low altitude that I would not have thought would have been survivable, but it was. Both of the occupants of this Cirrus walked away, and I was amazed by that, even though I believe at the time that was below the published envelope of the parachute.
When I was at researching these accidents, I talked to Boris Popov, who's head of, or was then head of BRS, which is the Cirrus parachute system, and we were discussing these low altitude pulls. And there's a characteristic type of Cirrus accident you see fairly commonly, and it's a go around accident where the pilot goes around because of a botched landing or possibly even on a takeoff, loses control of it because he doesn't use enough right rudder, and ends up on the left side of the runway. And we were talking about these low-altitude deployments, and I said, well, the parachute is of no help in that circumstance. And I just made that statement. He said, well, he believed that it was because he said, look at the situation you're in. If you're 200 or 300 feet, you've already lost control of the airplane. You're not getting it back. The more drag you can get out, the sooner you get it out, the less crash energy is involved and the better off you are and the more likely you are to survive. So in this circumstance, from 400 feet, the Sears parachute, when it deploys, when the risers have fully unstowed and the slider has cleared, there's still something called a snubber line, which keeps the nose pointed down. And there are pyrotechnic squibs which burn through that and it goes level. Well, in this circumstance, you might not have time to do that. So as Ivy said, you might hit nose first. Well, there was one accident where that happened. The airplane did hit nose first, not nose down, but about a 45-degree angle. The occupants were injured, but they survived. So that could be this scenario here. You might hit in a 45-degree nose down, but you'll be going a hell of a lot slower than you would be in a stall or a spin or just a out-and-out fly into a building or something.
Well, we do have a number of subscribers who aren't flying Cirruses, and so option 5 is off the table for them, right? And I want to go back to what Wally said about, you know, all of my training has been about push that nose over. And this pilot lost really valuable time and energy in the couple seconds of, wait, this is really an emergency. Wow, my engine's not working anymore, and that lever isn't helping at all. I mean, because VY on the Cirrus is, what, 101 or something like that? So that pilot may have been already at like 100 knots. At decision time, we're down to 75. So how do you prepare that way? How do you prepare for that situation of, I've lost my engine and there's no red handle overhead?
Well, I want to make the point, Jeff, that that the seconds of confusion that you're talking about is normal. And it's going to happen in almost any scenario you happen. There is a certain amount of time where the reaction time to see what's happening, to process what's happening, and then to actually do something about it, which is why it's so important in certain critical phases of flight that you've practiced, the military calls it bold face, certain malfunctions that you know exactly how you're going to react when you see the indicator. So that's an important thing to remember.
And that just goes, as Ivy pointed out, to a good takeoff briefing. If you've already decided what you're going to do on takeoff, all you have to do is execute. You don't have to process and think as much. So if you've done that work before you start moving down the runway, you're way ahead of the game.
And then there's adjusting your takeoff briefing, like you said, for, you know, that situation. I don't think you would pull the chute if this was in the middle of Kansas somewhere and it was just fields ahead of you at that altitude.
Or if you had a 10,000-foot runway, you'd just land on the runway.
You'd just land on the runway. That one's just a gimme. But there's still preloading that action, especially in that critical phase where you're climbing out and it's easy to be, you know, check out on like, okay, cool, we're climbing. You know, you're not climbing that far yet.
I have a question for you, Ivy. And this may be your personal view on this. Let's say that there were open fields ahead of you, maybe with a few obstacles, and you were at 600 to 1,000 feet. Pull or land?
I'd pull. Here's the way I equate it, right? If I am driving through a farm field at 70 miles an hour, there's a lot more energy there than if I'm coming down like I'm jumping off an 11-foot ladder, which is the amount of energy that you would have over canopy, under canopy. So, you know, if I had the 1,000 feet and there was a field right in front of me, I'm not really sure what I would get, right? I mean, you don't see rocks and ditches and little tiny fences across fields and things like that until you're too close to make any sort of good change in decision. I'm probably a little bit biased. Most of my time is in a Cirrus. You know, if I was in my Citabria in the same situation, I would absolutely put it down in the farm field or at 1,000 feet. I'd have plenty of altitude to turn around and go back to the runway.
Well, wouldn't have a choice because you don't have the
don't have the parachute in
The Citabria parachute system.
Yeah.
But there's a point there. I mean, going back to if we didn't have the chute available and someone wants to preload this for themselves, we don't have bold-faced training in GA. How do you trained for this in any kind of practical way without risking actually losing an airplane in training? Like, what's a good way that someone who is listening to this can put themselves in the right frame of mind for an engine failure on takeoff?
Well, I think Brian Schiff recently in AOPA outlined some pretty good guidelines to take your airplane out and practice at altitude in a safe way, and provided some pretty good guidelines for that.
And I think old-fashioned chair flying, you know, to sit through and think, okay, based on the airplane that I fly the most, what's the parameter that I'm comfortable with? What are the things that are really going to cause me a problem? Engine failure right after takeoff at Frederick on runway 23 is not a very good position to be in. So most people that fly out of Frederick have thought about that. You're going to go left or you're going to go right. Neither one of them are good, but those are decisions you can make beforehand.
What I do on the preload is before every takeoff, I tell myself, this time, no kidding, the engine is really going to quit. It's really going to quit. And I think that through the entire roll until I'm at altitude. And the only other response after that, if it really does quit, fulfills my prediction, get the nose down. Because once you've got the nose down, then you've got some seconds to decide what you're going to do. I don't think you have to pre-decide that. But if you don't get the nose down, you're not in the game. It's over at that point.
Let's back up one more step here, because I think we've all been in this situation, and Michael alluded to it, which is the airplane was talking to this pilot all day and before that, and yet it wasn't like a screaming kind of voice, something is really wrong here. It was like, I'm being cranky. And, you know, Paul, you have an airplane that's 80 years old. It's cranky all the way around the pattern and back to land. I mean, you know, yeah. So where's the balance on that? Like, you know, you got to go home from Fullerton. The plane's running. It's warmed up. It's smooth now, right? Clearly, it's got some kind of issue, but it hasn't manifested in any kind of scary way before this moment.
I think an engine dying at idle is a scary manifestation of a problem. And that's happened. To this guy. I agree with Michael. I think the guy was crazy to take the airplane in that kind of a scenario, in that congested area. Sure, he took it to a mechanic, and the mechanic adjusted the fuel pressure. I don't know if it was a Cirrus specialized mechanic who really knows the airplane, but I think it was talking to him.
I agree that airplanes don't just quit, right? They just give up the ghost one day just because they felt like it. There's always some kind of a warning sign. There's some metal in the oil. There's a funny vibration. Oil pressure temperatures changed a little bit over time. And how many times have we got in an airplane with one of our friends that says, oh, that gauge always does that? Like, yeah, but that doesn't make it right, right?
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And I, you know, it's like you get into a plane with somebody and they go to full power and you're like, you know, it's constant speed prop. I was with somebody not that long ago and I was like, that's 2,400 RPM. He goes, oh, yeah, it's always like that. You know, and I wasn't PIC. I was riding along. We already rotated. And I'm like, boy, that's just really disconcerting. Might just be a bad tachometer, but maybe your prop set wrong. Maybe the prop set right, and that engine's just not producing power. You know, there are warning signs in there. So, yeah, I think being aware of those, but then also, as Paul said, just having that preload of, like, no matter what the plane's been saying, today could be the day, and staying engaged in that moment until, you know what, even if I have a delay in reacting, I've got some altitude beneath me, I've got some airspeed moving forward to have a moment, as Ivy said, to like, okay, I'm high enough, I can make a decision and evaluate, even if it's a quick one, I don't have to act in the moment right then and right there.